When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Trouble in Africa.
We are really suffering. We wake up early in the morning, sometimes at 2 o'clock or 3, and then we went to the rivers. There is a river there. And then we'll just walk about 2 hours or 3 to fetch water.
Africans, they have no peace.
Community of Leboeng is a community that has gone through untold suffering, in the sense that for a long time, for about 6-7 months, they did not have water at all in the community, and they had to go, women had had to travel distances of up to 3-4 kilometers to travel for water. They would have to wake up at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning to get water for consumption in the house and in the family. They would have to bring water into the house early in the morning before the children went to school, so the children could wash and go to school. And they would have to bring in the water on their heads that is going to be used for washing dishes, for cooking, and for consumption in the home for the whole day. And the following morning at 2 o'clock, they would have to do the same. And it was this kind of hardship that got the people of Leboeng to start thinking about a development committee and to start thinking about how they can bring water into the community. And the first things they did was to contact government, the government of Leboa, which is the authority which is governing their area at the moment. And after discussions and meetings with Leboa and pleadings with the government, they could not get anywhere. And so they used their own initiative to bring water to the village. Each family had to contribute, we are told, about 50 rand. Some families didn't have it, so some were exempted and some's price, their price was halved. But they managed to bring in enough money that has now brought them water into the village.
Africans, they have no peace.
We need to rebuild the country destroyed by the war. Today we can say that we are among the 5 poorest countries in the world. We are a country with 6 million people in the situation of refugees and displaced people, mainly 1.5 refugees and 4.5 displaced people, mainly coming from rural areas. But in 1981, we are not in this situation.
The voices of two nations telling apparently separate stories, yet these are both tales of war and of want, and both trace their roots to the destructive effects of apartheid. Leah Malaja told of her daily walk for water from her home village of Leboeng in a dusty valley in what, until South Africa's first all-race elections last month, was the supposedly self-governing Bantustan of Leboa, homeland by order of the white government to 3.2 million of the North Sotho people. Brian Malefi, coordinator of the community-run Northern Transvaal Regional Development Forum, gave us a summary of how the people of Leboeng, who, with strong irony, called their village California, set out to bring water to their doors through a self-help project. And then from across the eastern border, Mozambique's junior planning minister, Tomás Salamão, reported on the extent of the refugee and poverty problem facing his country after more than a decade of white South African-sponsored war of destabilization. And that's how these two stories today roll into one. They're both tales of the struggle against apartheid. They both demonstrate the immensity of the task facing all the people of the Southern African region, now that the ideology of separate development for the races is finally gone. The new South Africa inherits 7 million people living in squatter camps. It has a huge illiteracy problem. Unemployment runs at perhaps 70% in poor areas. The ANC has promised to electrify 5 million homes in 5 years and provide running water for 1 million houses. We'll meet the villagers of Lebueng who decided to solve their own water problems. Over in Mozambique, the war of destabilization has ended. Reconciliation is in the air. Elections are due to be held towards the end of this year. But 25 years of fighting, first against the Portuguese colonists, then against the sponsored insurgents of White Rhodesia, and finally South Africa, has impoverished the nation and made it dependent on emergency aid rather than development programs. Today we'll visit Niassa, known as Mozambique's forgotten northern province, where even a recognized musician like Mario Agostinho must strum his tunes not on a guitar, but on a paint tin, covered with a python skin, nailed to a strip of wood and strung with 3 pieces of cord. We begin back in Lebueng, or California, where Leboa government boreholes, which offered a rudimentary water system, were left unrepaired for 7 months, provoking the people to take action themselves.
Life here in California is really difficult. There's a lot of things that we are running short of, like water is the first, but these days we can say with water it is little simple. And then we are shorting off electricity, roads are dusty, and many things.
What about the health of the people, of the children and the adults?
It is also very difficult because we don't have a clinic here. There's no telephones, and then the hospital is very far. Yeah, we are traveling very far to get to hospital.
Well, what about, has the new water supply made any difference to the health of people?
I can say the health of the people is not really simple because this water, we aren't sure if it is healthy because it is from the mountain there. It is not purified.
So do you boil the water?
We don't boil it. We just drink.
The life here, it's not 100% as it's supposed to be because now when coming to health, they are suffering from different diseases like malaria, like bilharzia, like cholera, etc. Right, the very same diseases originate from the water we are using. Why? Because now this water is not good for people to can use. So now that's why I say it needs some sort of purification, etc., so that now we can guarantee the health of this water.
And what about, you talk about the unemployment level in the community. What do people do here as we stand here and we look around as the sun fades behind the mountains at the end of this valley? We see a community which is built on dust, a community which doesn't seem to me to be able to sustain much by way of agriculture. I've seen a few cattle around, but very few crops being planted. So how do people survive?
Well, here now it's a problem because we didn't have water then. So as a result now, agriculture becomes difficult, say now for plowing, etc. It becomes so difficult for us. You see now, so now the people around here, they don't have work to do. As a result now, they are housewives, they just laborers, they depend, say, sometimes if perhaps now there is something, contributions from any other place where they say, well, okay, they can be employed for 3 months, etc. That's where now they used to get money. Or they are working for boers, right, who used to pay them less than 30 rand or even 60 rand a month. So it's too little to survive and it's too little to educate their children.
School principal Lazarus Mwani. There are around 7,000 people in Lebueng, about 10,000 total in the valley, which includes 3 other villages. Dr. Nicholas Crisp, a health and population development expert, describes the northern Transvaal in which it is situated.
It's got international borders with three different countries. That is Botswana in the west, Zimbabwe in the north, and Mozambique in the east. It's also bordered by Maputo-Tswana, which is an independent state in the south, and it's got a piece of Kangwane bordering on its southeast border, which is one of the self-governing territories. Then within the northern Transvaal, about 70% of the landmass is RSA, Transvaal province, piece of Transvaal province, and it has the whole of Venda, which is an independent state, and the whole of Gazankulu and the whole of Lebowa, which are both self-governing territories.
An apartheid patchwork. 70% of Northern Transvaal belonged, till last month, to the white-run Republic of South Africa. That meant that 70% of the land belonged to 3% of the inhabitants. Now the Republic of South Africa belongs to all its people. But it will be some time before many of the Northern Sotho, 64% of the local population, managed to move from the crowded territory which was Lebowa. It will take time for the ANC-led government to make good its election promises. Hence the importance of the first small steps in self-reliance, such as the Lebueng Water Project. Brian Malefi.
Lebueng community mainly was organized by necessity. It was something that had to be done for their own survival. I mean, the things that they were doing to get water into their homes were simply not acceptable. And they were driven into a situation where they would be prepared to do anything to get water into the village. And I think it is a kind of condition that drove people to do that kind of thing, to go to that kind of extreme. We are talking here about a pipeline that is about 3 kilometers away, a pipeline that had to be set up in very mountainous area with rocks and so on along the road and uphills and downhills on the pipeline. In fact, the general slope is upwards from where the water point to the weir itself, and it was very difficult. We're talking about a situation where men and women had to carry 50 kilogram bags of cement over a distance of about 3 kilometers, which is very difficult to travel even when you're not carrying anything. You did it with about 7 kilograms of weight on you, but it was still very difficult. I found it difficult with nothing. But people traveled that distance with 50 kilogram bags of cement. That's a lot of effort, and that's a lot of determination. It takes a lot of determination from people who are not going to be paid for doing that kind of thing.
People of Lebueng, they are very poor and they are in unemployment. So even to get at the 50 rand each house was difficult. Even now, some of the people, they haven't been paid that money. But with the people to force them themselves to help them, because there was nobody who can help them to get at the water. They have just tried their best to bring that the water to here.
We cannot say the water is quite healthier. Why? Because now see that it needs some purification here. So you can see right here, there's got some grasses, cow dung inside. So it needs some purification, as I say, so that now we clean up this dam, then we put the cement, and then etc. So we are unable to do it presently. Why? Because we don't have sufficient funds.
I think the most important thing now is to get there some resources over and above what they need to do practically in terms of taking the water to the other communities. We need to develop, to get some resources to sophisticate the manpower that is there. I think we need workshops in Lebueng to teach people, especially the people in the community, about, for example, basic accounting skills, basic management skills, and so on. And planning and strategic planning. We need to go there and organize workshops that will teach people those things in simple, understandable methodology. And the reason for that is, for example, in that water system, you have seen yourself that the pipe was moved for no less than 4 times. It was moved from the poles, and it was moved from another area, and it was moved again and again. And that means that there was not enough strategic planning involved, and so on. The people have had to handle about 30,000 rand with no accounting skills and so on. We have to go in there and build the capacity of that community. The capacity of that community to handle projects of that nature has to be built. And I think we have to invest resources in that.
I was also thinking about what they could do to help the community. There's no farming, as far as I could see, happening in that area at all. Now, there was one big area with about, that would have half a dozen cattle on it, very scrawny cattle, which looks like it could be a tilled field if there were water on it.
Yeah, that is the other problem. That at the moment the problem was drinking water for people for domestic consumption, for people. The people of Lebueng have identified other things that they would like to do, like embark on a major agricultural scheme that would involve major irrigation. And at the moment, it looks like they're just addressing the problem of domestic water supply. Once that has been addressed, I think they will move into things like that, a major agricultural scheme. And I think it is feasible. The land there, although not arable, not very fertile, I think with the crop manure that they can gather and all sorts of artificial fertilizers that they can get the soil to produce to create employment and to make the community survive on that. There are other things that people need there. They need the equipment for the schools. The schools have hardly anything. They said they need a library to which the youth can go after school. They need a clinic. As you saw there, they have only one room which is reserved to be a clinic, one dilapidated room. They are themselves trying to build, extend that room into several other rooms, which will serve as a clinic. The nurse only comes, not a doctor, a nurse, comes about once a week there. They need to improve that service. And the development committee has identified those things, and they would like to get those things done.
And how far away is the nearest doctor?
The nearest doctor, I think, would be in Tzaneen, which is about 120 kilometers away.
Apartheid's legacy means that even now, many from Lebueng would be uncertain whether they may go to the doctor in Tzaneen, a white town, a conservative Afrikaner stronghold. Their own medical services should have been provided by the government of Leboa as part of an experiment in human engineering which left this region with the highest illiteracy rate in South Africa, the highest child mortality rate, and, at 52%, the highest overall unemployment. But even where racism was not institutionalized, Africa's chronic underdevelopment is testimony to the lost century of colonial rule. And in the frontline states bordering South Africa, testimony also to the impossible struggle for fledgling independent states against a lager mentality to the south, which, till recently, believed its own survival to be dependent on the destruction of the socialist experiments on its borders. Mozambique was one such victim, and it's to there that we now move to see how a war of independence, followed by that war of destabilization by Smith's Rhodesia and Botha's South Africa, has held up development throughout the country, but nowhere worse than in the northern province of Niassa, which its inhabitants call the Forgotten Province. Josephat Damaka came there first as a guerrilla, fighting for independence from the Portuguese, which was gained in 1975.
It was in 1968 when me and my two brothers belonging to the Frelimo movement we enter in Niassa. Faced the same difficulties which we are facing now. Even the Portuguese were facing the same difficulties because of the communications. The targets were very dispersed. And even the Portuguese, who were the Portuguese or the Portuguese soldiers coming to Niassa? Were those, we can say, undisciplined Portuguese soldiers and unwanted and so on. I left to abroad to Romania for my studies, university studies. It was 1974, so I returned 1979. I found the Frelimo government was facing another war, Smith War. So the main importance was given to the war. That is why Niassa remained the same as it was. But and this was very, very difficult for Niassa. The war made the means of communication, the route, to be very difficult indeed. And the railway The railway from Nacala, from Kwamba to Lishinga was never been maintained. To come from Kwamba to Lishinga takes 2-3 weeks in 300 kilometers.
It can be an extremely frustrating place to live because of those difficulties that you've mentioned, the lack of electricity, the lack of water, the lack of access in terms of transport or even other forms of communication, telephones or anything, yeah? But it was a place with great potential.
Fergal Flynn, an Irish doctor who, along with his Scottish doctor wife, Kate, and their daughter, has made Lishinga, Niassa Province's capital, his home for now. And those frustrations are real, even for a short-term visitor. The conditions I found in the hotel had not improved since Dr. Innocent arrived from Nigeria 6 years ago.
It was a horrible experience, really. I never expected it. Really, if it had been that I came here on my own without being sent by my government, I would have decided to go back because it was horrible. It was really horrible. Believe you me, I stayed in the hotel for 3 weeks. I saw hell. It was a hotel. You go in. You are only given half bucket of water to have your bed. You are given a little water to flush the toilet. You have no right to use the toilet anymore because there's no water to pour into the toilet. Now you go to the refectory, you want to eat in the restaurant. They give you bread. It is just like a stone. You throw the bread against the wall, it comes back to you. You go to the refectory, you go with sugar, you go with milk. The worst is if you remove, it's in a hotel, if you remove your clothing, you give your soap to wash the clothing. The clothing comes worse. That is more dirtier than the time you gave the clothes to wash. So it was a horrible experience.
At night, the guest is still given a candle to guide him upstairs. The bed has no sheets. In the morning, a half bucket of lukewarm water awaits him to wash in the communal bathroom and to flush the toilet, which also has no running water. For breakfast, there is egg and chips and a stale roll. The war against RENAMO, the South African-sponsored rebels, is over. But improvements in the quality of life come oh so slowly to the north. Fergal Flynn again.
The war has brought us difficulties in two senses. One has brought severe difficulties in terms of transport, in terms of communication, in terms of us getting the basic materials that we need with which to function. In another sense, the war and the bandits or RENAMO, they have destroyed, it has been health and health installations have been a major target all throughout this war in the last 10 years. So in that sense, they have decreased, they have made life more difficult for us. And then against that, or also not against that, but also with that, you have the fact that war creates more victims. It creates greater health problems. It creates greater health problems like in the obvious sense of people who have either been shot, are blown up by mines, are macheted, are burnt. But it also creates in the indirect way, which in ways that aren't always immediately apparent, it creates a problem in the sense that the population here can't produce enough food because people don't have access to their mashambas, to their farms. And so they're scared because of bandit activity. And so the amount of food that they produce is less, which brings all those problems of malnutrition, increased malnutrition, increased deaths of babies, and all these health problems that people know about, all these basic problems.
Julie Warren is an English woman who has lived in Niassa for 9 years and works for the government. She produces a magazine for children, about which we'll hear later.
It's been a province that's been very, very isolated for years and years, totally cut off from the rest of the country. So the people have been cut off, literally, because the roads have been impassable owing to RENAMO action. It hasn't been safe to travel on these roads for years and years and years, so now they've fallen into a terrible state of disuse, where during the wet season it is impossible to travel on them. This is the dry season, so now many people are making the effort to get out. I mean, even just this weekend, I, with a small group of people, managed to get out to a small village some 100 kilometres or more up the lake, Niassa, to the north, a small village called Kobwe, which has been isolated for years and years, of course. We took, by road, we went down to Metangula, which is down on the shore of the lake. We went by a small boat, which belongs to the Conselho Cristão, sorry, that's Portuguese again, the Christian Council of Mozambique have bought a boat, a small boat, which holds about 18 people and a small amount of cargo. And they are using this boat as a means of communication with the lake villages, which largely have been abandoned owing to RENAMO action. The RENAMO attacked them at various times, and the people, of course, ran away to Malawi. But now, of course, that they want to come back. But as we saw in Kobwe this weekend, the situation is the people are so poor. There is no food. They just can't come back because they would starve.
Not long ago, it was almost impossible to make that journey. Fergal Flynn again.
On that road to Metangula, like before 10 months ago when the war was on, it was not considered safe. So basically, you have to travel in convoy, military convoy. But this means that journeys are extremely limited, because the organization of a convoy takes a certain amount of time. You have to organize the military personnel. You have to coordinate that all the various people who are going to travel on the convoy are ready and are prepared to go at the same time. Or else one always has the option of going without the convoy. And it's quite true that many of my colleagues and also myself, on some occasions, we travelled without convoy, which is not the most wonderful experience, in the sense that one travels and one travels very frightened, because nobody wants to die.
The war is over. There are now no mines on the very difficult road to Metangula. But problems remain, as detailed by Peter Crawford, an Englishman doing a needs survey for a Danish non-governmental agency.
Niassa, the forgotten province, is forgotten. And the information I'm getting is that they need help in all fields. I mean, we're talking about health, we're talking about education, we're talking about very sort of fundamental things like providing food for starving families. There is starvation here. There is terrible malnutrition here out in the byways and villages. But I think one of the major problems of Niassa is a problem concerning infrastructure. The problem is that there are two flights a week to Maputo via Nampula. And then there's the railway, and a train arrives every second month or third month. I've been working in two biros of Lishinga itself. Biros in the city are very much, well, city, let's call it a town, are very much, in principle at least, like villages are, but they're huge. And therefore they have the disadvantages of urban life. My opinion is that compared to an ordinary village, they're filthy. They have more severe health problems than in the villages, because there are so many people gathered together. They have the disadvantages of urban life combined with not being able to carry out normal village life, because they can't. They've got mashambas, they've got their fields, but they are where they came from. So they have to go very far to their mashambas. Then they stay there for probably 2 weeks and come back. But while they're in the town itself, there's nothing really they can do. When it comes to school facilities in this old bairro, the big one, they do have a school which is functioning, although not very good. It's because of the problems of teachers not getting sufficient salary to survive, and therefore they have to go out to their mashambas as well and grow food. A teacher's salary is the equivalent approximately of two latas or tins of maize, which is probably about 20 kilos of maize, which is the staple diet of this area.
So the salary would not keep a teacher in maize for 1 month?
It wouldn't, no, because many families, the poor families, eat nothing but maize. Maize, and the only sort of protein input they have is from beans. They can't afford meat.
How do you start trying to bring aid to a people like this?
Well, I think speaking about infrastructure, sanitation, roads, water, health, it's such a major problem here that it needs what I would call big help, which is for big organisations, international organisations, for the UN system and other large international organisations. I think where smaller organisations or aid agencies can help is to start out in the villages and districts to facilitate and catalyse work being done by the people themselves. For instance, in Nishinga, but now that there's peace, potentially in the whole of the province, the organisation that I'm working for intends to intensify its work with youth, because the basic strategy being that the adults forget it, because they're already... The youth is the future.
In the schools, the children have absolutely nothing. Some of the children have the class book, but not all of them, because they're expensive to buy. The teacher will have the class book, and he just works through the blackboard. But there's nothing for the children to read. So we thought this would be an important contribution to try and provide something on a regular basis every month for the children to read.
Well, you've got last month's edition of it there. Can you take me quickly through it and tell me, give us an idea of the sort of message that you're trying to get through to children?
Well, it isn't only messages. The children write to us. We have letters from the children about what goes on in their school or in their homes or in their village, which we edit a little so that the Portuguese is correct, so that they're not reading incorrect Portuguese in the school. So we have two pages in which there are letters from the children, and we put little illustrations along with the...
Here's just a story about what boys throwing stones at passing people. Bold thing to do.
Well, there's just a boy who wrote back saying how he was walking home one night and he was really scared because all of a sudden a huge stone landed behind him and he suddenly saw all these naughty little children who were throwing stones at him. So he just... These are the kind of things they write about. Or
the man who fell down the well.
Yeah, the man who fell down the well. He was trying to find the bucket that goes down the well, leaned over too far and fell in. And then they all stood around at the top and wondered what to do. And then somebody had a bright idea. Oh, I'll go and fetch a cord and pull him out. So they pull him out. And then the last sentence says, "And this senor now is in hospital." So those little stories that happen in the village, they send to us and we write down, thinking these are things that children would like to read about. They're amused, and things that other children have written. Most important thing is the pictures, because nobody ever sees any pictures at all. It's a life without images out in the village. There are none. So to see a picture of something is very important.
Life in the villages may indeed be without pictures, but that's less life-threatening than waiting on Lixinga Hospital's operating table without electricity. Dr. João Paulo.
Sometimes we must come here to operation. We need to make some operation, a big operation,
not petrol, for put away the
generator,
and not general electricity. Sometimes it's very difficult for the patient. Sometimes can die the patient. Now, we think when general electricity to work is good for us, we think if what possible to put the generator to work every time is very good for us, but we haven't money for to put every time because the petrol is very, very expensive.
Dr. Innocent from Nigeria.
If you come here at night, after 9 p.m., you see that the whole place is blackout. There are operations that are suspended because of no light. There are operations that are suspended because of no medical equipment. There are operations that are suspended because there is no skilled personnel to handle it. It is the effect of the war.
The last month, there came two doctors of Nigeria for to work in Nyasa. But when they come in Maputo, the people in Maputo said them, Nyasa, not electricity, not water, not food, not nothing. They said, the minister, no, okay, we don't go to Nyasa. Finish. They go other province. Myself, I was born here in Nyasa. I know Nyasa. But if I not was born here, never I can come in Nyasa. You can see the difficulties very. You haven't electricity, you haven't telephone, you haven't nothing. My wife is in Maputo. Never I can to speak with the telephone. You haven't water, you haven't medicine. You go in the hospital, the difficulty of medicines.
Life is difficult for all, not just for the doctors and patients, on a fertile plateau just 6% of whose arable land has been tilled. Living down by the shores of Lake Nyasa, Emmanuel Kapelawele notes some of the difficulties.
We need the transport. If at all the war is going to be over completely, we need the transportation. Communication is very important. There is no communication as far as... If you ask a person about the noticia, which is the paper which is written in our capital, in Maputo, it is not known here. And other people up to this time, they do not know that there is a paper which a person can read. We have no news. We don't know anything. We don't know what is happening in our country. If these things could be improved, I believe that our province, one of the days, will join the rest of the provinces in our country.
But what Nyasa really needs is to invite more non-government organizations for short programs, medium and long-term programs. Nyasa is a great potential in agriculture, agro-agriculture, very potential. Is also very potential in mining, and also in fishery, of course, in Lake Nyasa, is very potential, and also touristic along the Lake Nyasa. With the peace, I think Nyasa will take a good place in Mozambique.
Their major problem at the moment is that they lack material resources, that people lack. We have so many health posts that have been burnt out and destroyed, and my hopes are that with the end of the war, and if the peace is a true peace that will hold, that we can build on the system, we can build on the healthcare that we have, and can build on the personnel that we have, and with inputs of some materials deliver better care to the population.
Back in Maputo, Mozambique's capital city, Paul Fauve is a journalist with the state news agency.
The problem is that Mozambique is desperately dependent on foreign aid. It's never got as much foreign aid as it's asked for. There is a problem of the donors, what is called donor fatigue. There's a problem of pledges being translated into actual money in the bank. I am seriously worried that if things go on at the current pace with so many delays, then yes, donors may well lose interest. You can't force donors to give you money, especially when there are so many other competing claims. Of course, it's enormously difficult, and much will depend on how the region as a whole evolves. Obviously, a democratic government in South Africa would be a help for Mozambique, would unlock the region.
The Irish government is currently studying how we, in our small way, can help Mozambique reconstruct before moving to a proper development program. The Department of Foreign Affairs is also looking at worthwhile causes in South Africa now that freedom has arrived. Niassa's needs are immense, as are those of all of Mozambique, which suffered more than anywhere except Angola, as white South Africa fought to maintain its apartheid system. The needs of South Africa are even larger, but since less of the country has been destroyed, the new government starts from a more advanced position. And already, communities like that in Lebueng, which recently received sufficient outside aid to allow the completion of the provision of water for the whole valley, are showing the potential of self-help. At the end of my tour of the pipeline, the school hall was crammed with villagers who had come to meet the visitor and insist he made a speech. They also presented me with a concert of 9 choirs who combined with all in the hall at the end to sing the anthem of the new South Africa, Inkosi Sikelele Africa.
Lebueng is very typical of the Northern Transvaal. Well, the project that they have there is not, I cannot say, is a fair reflection of the amount of work that people in the region are doing to help themselves. In certain areas, people are much less organized than the people in Lebueng are. But nevertheless, people have the same needs, people have the same problems as the people in Lebueng. So in as far as the problems in Lebueng are concerned, yes, it is a typical Northern Transvaal village. But the community of Lebueng stands out as having been able to do something about their problem. The people in the other areas, it's just that the people in the other areas have not had the luck of having people, the quality of people, for example. Like you'll have, people like in Lebueng here and there, but not everywhere, you know, and unfortunately not in most places. And I think they were fortunate to have the quality of a development committee that they have that has been able to do something about the problem. But otherwise in the rest of the region, yes, you have people who are determined and so on, who are just ordinary people who are frustrated and demoralized and have accepted their suffering.